Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up with Luke.
And Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle. Nice to see nice to see you again.
You too.
Well, this week we're joined by Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hello there.
Where are you calling us from, Anne?
I am in Waco, Texas.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all know about Waco, don't we? So we get that a lot. And also, I didn't know that before you came on, but now I'm going to just do everything in my power to not discuss Waco, because that is a different podcast, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure there's 1,000 Waco podcasts. Well, thank you for coming on, and we're really excited to have you here today to talk about your, well, is it going to be a one-off experience or event, or is it going to be a series of maybe a few things? And by the way, there's no rules on our podcast. The whole thing is about life-changing experiences and events, and it can be things from your childhood. It can be something that happened last Tuesday. It can be a whole series of events. And, you know, for the most part, we like to concentrate on where you got to, the things that happened, and what you did to kind of grow from those experiences. So with that intro, tell us where you'd like to begin.
Oh boy. Probably from the incident a few years ago, because if I decide to go back any farther than that, it could take a while.
That's true. We're limited.
Yeah. Yes. We're limited on time. Quickly, I can say, this part of my journey started actually about 5 years ago, when I finally got the courage to get out of an emotionally abusive marriage that had been, you know, long time coming. I'd been dealing with a lot there, and it took a while to build up to that. And I finally did, was finally getting my life on track, had a new business, had bought my own cute little historic house, even had someone new in my life, and everything was going well. Then about 3 years ago, I got the flu one weekend And, you know, just the flu. They ran tests at urgent care. Everything came back fine except for that. But when I took my antibiotic the very next day, within 4 hours, I had lost feeling in both of my legs from the knees down, and I couldn't walk.
Oh my God.
And so that's, yeah, that's what started the big incident 3 years ago that changed my life.
Okay. So let's take a quick, firstly, congratulations on getting out of your abusive marriage. That's a terrible, terrible thing. How long were you in that marriage for?
Over 20 years.
Goodness gracious me. Wow. And if you don't, and if you don't mind, before we get to the, obviously that huge event, can we just talk a little bit about what that looked like? If that's not too personal, that kind of emotional abuse. And I guess that, I mean, we've covered abuse of many types on the podcast, and it doesn't leave you in very good shape, does it? Let's be honest.
No, it doesn't. I've had talks with other women who have gone through divorce, and I feel so bad for the ones who have gone through physical abuse. Mm. And I'm so thankful that I didn't have that. But we have had conversations about how, you know, you still have the internal scars.
And
those scars are still very hard to heal. You know, other people may not be able to see them, but they are there, and they are very, they take a long time to heal. And so, yeah, it was rough. It was, you know, mainly, you know, gaslighting, a lot of control. And, you know, anytime I tried to accomplish something in my life, he was there trying to bring me back down.
That's
a lot of years to see it, because he was such a master manipulator. Yeah. And, you know, I consider myself a smart person and an independent person. But when you come up against someone like that, who is so good at manipulating, it takes a long time to finally really figure it out. And then after that, try to figure out what now do I do to get out of it now that I understand it.
I was going to say, that's like a common trait with, you know, abusers is, you know, they don't start off like right in the relationship that they act this way. They kind of slowly open the floodgates, and then you're questioning everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So good, and that's what he did. Yeah, that's what he did. He made me question everything. And then when I started to start questioning things a few years before the divorce, you know, that's when he really kicked it up a notch. You know, everything I questioned or fought back against the control, you know, he was there with an excuse or, you know, something else and pushing me back. And so it took a lot to get out of it. And, you know, there was, you know, basically a lot of nights of, you know, crying myself to sleep. And the straw for me, you know, the final thing was one day he was yelling at both me and my daughter, and over something, you know, once again, just crazy. And he would get so angry in his, you know, arguing and his screaming. And I remember I had an itch on my arm, and I started scratching it. And without even realizing it, I ended up hurting myself. I cut myself. I was scratching so hard because of it was, and I found out later that it was a reaction. Yeah. It was another way to feel something to counteract that anger that was being directed at me.
Wow.
And I didn't even notice it until the next day when I was getting ready and I looked in the mirror and I saw this dried blood.
Oh my God.
And then it hit me, you know, oh my gosh. And I had a niece who was a cutter, someone who, you know, hurt themselves to, you know, go against this other pain that, you know, she was dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so that crossed my mind right at that moment. And I thought, I cannot believe me of all people, I hurt myself without even realizing it.
Wow.
And I will not become that person. And that was it for me. That was the wake up call I needed to say, this is it. No more. I can't do this.
And was your daughter young, or she grown through into an older daughter? And how was she affected by all of this? Was it mostly directed at you, this kind of emotional abuse? Was she relatively protected from that?
No, it was mostly against me.
Mm.
But in that particular case, it was at both of us. Mm. And it did affect her, too. But the crazy thing is, you know, I finally got the courage to file for divorce, and she was an adult. And so she was off on her own, had her own job, living in her own place. So it didn't have too much of an effect that way. But we stayed close. We talked. But then eventually, you know, he was the one who made a ton of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And so he went from calling her horrible things and treating her bad to, when he wanted to get something back at me, he suddenly started paying for all sorts of things, you know, paying for big expensive trips for her and her boyfriend. And
he was buying buying her allegiance and her love.
Yes, exactly. Ugh. And then the next thing I knew, I wasn't hearing from her anymore. And anything I did to be the mother, you know, and still, because if she would do bad things or I would know about it, I would talk to her as any mother would. And I would tell her, that's not right. You don't do those sorts of things. This is how you should do things. And she would get so angry with me over it and then go running back to him, because all he would do is, you know, nod agree to everything that she said or did. And so then by the time the incident rolled around, here I was in the hospital, you know, that event, I can explain more, but I was laying there in a hospital bed, having just found out that I was lucky to be alive. And I never heard.
You never heard from her?
Nope.
I can't bear it.
It's very heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
Oh, it was. It was very heartbreaking. And to this day, we don't talk.
I can't. Bear it. It's devastating. So this is a good transition to bring us back up to speed with the incident. So you made a clean break from your ex. I'm assuming that took and is taking a lot of rebuilding, and I guess there's self-esteem and confidence and all sorts of things that you're building, having to build back after, I guess, being manipulated and treated that way for such a long time. So that's ongoing, right?
Oh yeah. everyday progress. Okay.
But then, just when you're like, okay, now I can start to rebuild my life, I made a clean break, you got the flu. So talk to us about that event.
Okay, yeah, so I got the flu, and it got so bad by the second day that I finally took myself to urgent care. And like I said, they ran all kinds of tests, including a CT scan, and everything came back being normal except for the inflammation on my abdomen, which showed I had the flu. And so they gave me the prescription for the antibiotic and the pain pill. Well, the next day, like I said, I took that very first antibiotic, and within 4 hours, I had lost feeling in my knee, in my legs from the knees down, and couldn't walk.
I can't.
So, oh yeah, it was very frightening. So my boyfriend then rushed me back to urgent care. They didn't know what to do with me. So then they stuck me on an ambulance and rushed me to the hospital. Well, then at the hospital, they ran their own set of tests, including a second CT scan. And that one, less than 24 hours after that first one, showed that my body had suddenly filled with blood clots from the kidneys down.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I had an entire body full of blood clots.
Oh, I mean, if you could see you can see my face right now. Shit.
Yes. And at that point, I was sort of out of it from something they had given me for pain at the urgent care place. So all I really remember at that point was them telling me, you know, seeing their faces, first of all, and them telling me, this is urgent, we're rushing you into surgery, honey. And that was it. Yeah, thankfully, I survived. I came through the surgery. I believe it was a miracle. I was blessed. And when I woke up, the surgeon told me that in all of his years of surgery, he had never seen anything like it. But he had to cut me in both groin areas and had to go in and start pulling out blood clots. And was pulling them out, trying to get them out before one of them burst. Because if that were to happen, you know, I wouldn't be here.
Yes. Incredible. So, I don't know a lot about blood clots, but what I do know is that even with like DVT, which you can get on a plane, or they can break loose and they can get into your lungs, your heart or your brain. And that's it, right? Death, blood clot, death, just everything stops. That's the end of that. So they My God. So they rushed you into the operating theater, and he basically pulled out, as wherever he found a blood clot, he was pulling out the blood clots.
Mm-hmm.
And at any
and that's
given,
not even the worst part.
Oh, well, then please continue. I just need to, I'm nervously talking because I think I have a fear of blood, but carry on.
Oh yeah. So when I woke up, I also saw that my left leg was wrapped. And he told me that during surgery, my right leg had gone back to normal, but my left leg had developed what they call compartment syndrome. It had gotten
swollen,
that it was about to burst. And so he had to cut my leg open on either side of it to relieve the pressure to try to save it. So he explained this to me and then tells me, I did all this to save your leg, but it didn't work, and we were preparing to amputate.
Oh my God.
And that's what I woke up to.
So you
were... You're lucky to be alive, but we're now preparing to amputate your leg.
And go on, Kyle. We're both like, oh my God.
No, I mean, I was in emergency medicine a long time ago in another life, and it's... Compartment syndrome is like a life-threatening thing. So on top of like your other life-threatening thing, you have this, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They called it a double fasciotomy is the proper term for what they did to my leg. And I guess apparently that's not that common either. That's what I woke up to.
So, and did they give you a time frame on we're preparing to amputate your leg unless something changes, unless something gets better? What happened at that stage?
No, the only reason they waited was because of what my body had already been through. And they were preparing to do an angiogram the next day to run another check to make sure they'd gotten all of the blood clots. They wanted to do an extra check behind my heart and lungs and around them just to make sure that they had gotten every single blood clot. So that was their first, you know, the thing that they needed to do first. That was the most urgent. And so thankfully for me, that made them wait on amputating my leg.
Oh my gosh.
And so for 2 days, I went through the angiogram the next day. More rounds of tests, testing everything else because they couldn't figure out why it happened. They didn't want to blame it on the antibiotic. They didn't want to do that. So, but I know I'm overweight, but I'm healthy. So every test they ran showed that I was a perfectly healthy person. And there's even a test that you can run to see if you have the predisposition for blood clots. They ran that and I don't have it. So that confused them. So you don't even have the predisposition for it. Yet somehow I ended up with a body full of them and it made no sense. So they ran all the tests. They did the angiogram. And in those 2 days, while I went through all this and I was waiting, I basically just, I prayed and I visualized because I believe in prayer and I also believe in the law of attraction and, you know, bringing the two together. So I stayed focused somehow. I think I was partly in shock, to be honest. And I focused on everything positive that I could. I refused to listen to anything negative. I let the nurses and doctors do their jobs and I just kept smiling as much as I could. And I visualized and I had this picture in my head of me in the future being back to normal, walking, all body parts intact. And I kept that image. And on the third day, somehow my leg came back to life.
Wow.
The color came back and they found a pulse and there had been no pulse for 2 days.
Oh my gosh.
And so at that, they said, okay, somehow, and I'm laying there kind of pointing up going, I got my second miracle this week.
Oh,
that's what
my
it means.
Gosh.
There was no other reason for it. They couldn't explain it.
I got goosebumps.
Go on, Kyle. I got goosebumps.
I was just going to ask, was there any like nerve damage or tissue damage? Because you didn't have blood circulating through.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That's why it's been this month is actually 3 years since it happened. In 2 more weeks, it'll be 3 years. And I still, it took me over a year, I guess around the 18-month mark, to get final, you know, complete feeling back to my foot because of the nerve damage. And they told me that if I didn't have all my feeling back within a year, not to expect it to come back at all. Wow. And, but for me, with my, you know, faith and my, you know, positivity that I try to live by, I kept staying positive and I kept visualizing. And, you know, I got to that year point and I still didn't have complete feeling in my foot. I had most of it back by that point. But I just kept pushing through. I kept doing my exercises. I kept doing everything, you know, that people had told me to do in physical therapy. And finally, about the 18-month mark, I got all my feeling back. And now at the three-year point, the only issue I still have now is with my toes. Three of my toes curled under because of the nerve damage and then that lack of movement, even though I was still doing physical therapy. So now I'm, you know, wearing the little straighteners every day for at least a few hours in hope that I can eventually straighten out my toes too. So at this point, 3 years later, I think I would say maybe 99% back to normal.
Wow. That's insane. And then now can we go back and talk about something which you mentioned before? You haven't spoken to your daughter through any of this stuff.
No.
Oh.
No, she hasn't contacted me. She's basically, and then here, this is just a side thing, might be interesting to the story. She is or was my niece.
I see.
From my side of the family who needed a home. And my ex and I didn't have kids of our own. So we took her in and finished raising her as a teenager and then adopted her as our own.
That's amazing.
So she's from my side of the family.
No.
But yet, because of the weird issues with her biological father being my brother, even though no one in my family has contact with him because of his issues and everything he did that brought about that situation, she still had this fear, I guess, that, you know, someone else in the family would report back to him on things and tell him that she's getting married, that, you know, she's doing all these things.
Right.
And no matter what we told her, anything. She just refused to be around my side of the family. So that was the other part of it.
Almost like you were still too close to the person and the life she tried to get away from.
Yep. So she turned against me and my entire family and basically adopted his side of the family. And yeah, I've had no contact with her in, well, almost 5 years.
I'm sorry.
No, 4 years. Yeah.
It's rough. Would you live in how do you cope with that?
It took some time to get over and it still hurts, but I finally, you know, I had to keep working on myself and everything I knew I needed to do in my life. And especially dealing with an incident like that, I knew I couldn't let that kind of negativity affect me in any way, or there's no way I would have survived that incident. And I wouldn't be where I am right now if I had let something like that affect me. And so that was one of my, I figured one of these days, possibly she will get to that stage where she needs me and our family again. And when she does, you know, I'll welcome her back.
Yeah.
And, but until that point, there's no use in using that kind of energy to try to get someone to love you or, you know, be a part of your family if they really don't want that.
Yeah.
It's just it's too much energy. So that thought has helped me cope with it. And then of course I've gone through coaching classes myself to become a coach to help other women. And when you go through coaching, you learn a lot yourself and you actually learn to coach yourself and you're being coached by the coaches and you end up walking yourself through a lot of the things, you know, the drama you have in your own life and learning how to handle with that. And so really I've taken that as a way of helping other people. And so I've tried to turn it into a good thing.
I mean, that it's so inspiring and your story and the conversation we are having couldn't be more relevant to our podcast, because from all of the journey that you've been on and through all the knocks that you've had, the growth is extraordinary. And the things that you're saying, our listeners can take about, and we've heard this on a few of the other episodes, which is kind of just jettisoning, getting rid of all of the stuff you don't need, all the negativity, and not trying to control matters that are completely out of your hands. And what you mentioned there just now, which was like a waste of your energy. Kyle, I'm about to make it about me. I always do this. I spent half my life, I'd say, worrying about things that I had no need to worry about, no reason to worry about, just because that was my default, because it gave me some sense of weird security, or so I thought, and try to control situations that were completely out of my control, and try and second guess situations that I really had no place even being a part of. And once I learned that I didn't need any of that stuff, life is a very, very, well, it's much simpler, and it's easier to negotiate, because you've given yourself less hurdles. You've taken all the hurdles away. So
yes,
the road is straighter. There's less surprises around the corner because I haven't made these corners for myself. And it was sort of very self-imposed. In your case, of course, a lot of this was not self-imposed. I mean, for me, again, it wasn't self-imposed because some traumas made me that way, you know. But
yeah,
your story seems to be three-pronged to me. It's like the marriage, which was this long 20 years of like drip, drip, drip abuse, right? Then you have the whole story of your daughter. And to be honest with you, if that was our podcast episode, that would have been incredible, because that in itself is an extraordinary story of courage and heartbreak. But then we've got the leg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it's been three of the longest years of my life. And I think I mentioned to you kind of in the overview that, you know, I got my miracle of my leg coming back to life. But then, you know, my surgeon was awesome. He was, you know, great. He saved my life. He saved my leg. But, you know, how doctors can be, just very straightforward. So, you know, that day, you know, I remember just being so relieved, first of all. And I ended up having a room full of nurses and doctors and these other people just, you know, surrounding my bed, because no one could believe what had happened. And then from there, he looks at me and says, "Well, you get to keep your leg, but..." I'm like, "Oh, what's the but now? You know, I survived a body full of blood clots. My leg came back to life. And now you're giving me a but?" And so the next but was, "Well, you still don't have feeling. And because of the nerve damage, we don't know if or when you're going to get that feeling back. Shit. So it could be very difficult for you to learn how to walk again." And these two huge wounds, and when I say huge wounds, huge. You know, you mentioned not liking blood. If I almost made a friend pass out from showing him pictures of the first 2 days.
I can only
so
imagine.
If that gives you any indication. But these wounds were huge. And he told me that at least one of them, probably both of them, would need another surgery, skin graft surgery, for them to heal, that they would not heal on their own. So those were the next two things I was facing. But once again, I tried to stay positive. I prayed on it. I visualized. I did exactly what the wound care doctors told me to do. I did exactly what the physical therapy, you know, therapist told me to do. And I ended up, I started physical therapy about 2 months after the incident, when I finally got feeling down to my ankle and I had some movement again. And it had atrophied a little, but at least I had some movement. And I told them, you know, I was told that this would be difficult, but you're the experts. Mm. You tell me what to do. I will do it, because I will walk again. Mm. Because that doctor told me that day, that surgeon said, "It's going to be difficult and you could be a gimp the rest of your life."
Whoa.
And hearing those words were almost harder on me than anything that had happened in those previous few days. And I hadn't cried the entire time. And I'm a crier. I cry happy things, sad things, you know, Hallmark movies. That's just me. But for some reason, those first few days, I did not cry until he told me I was going to be a gimp. Then that's when I broke down and I lost it. And I ended up crying for 24 hours. I couldn't stop crying. It's like it had been, I guess, you know, kind of kept up, and everything just once it started, it wouldn't stop. So when I told the physical therapist that, they said, "If you're willing to work hard and work through the pain, you can walk again." And so I went from using the walker that I had been with, barely putting my left leg on the ground, to going to a cane and then walking on my own in the hospital in 6 weeks.
Wow.
That's
extraordinary.
Yeah, I beat all their odds there. And then with wound care, once again, I mean, I learned how to change these bandages, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a day in the beginning, and, you know, constantly caring for my wounds, doing what I needed to do, going into my checkups every week. And I think about the 3 month mark, the surgeon there took a look at it and told me, your skin is growing again. If you keep doing what you're doing, you won't have to have surgery. And it ended up taking 7 long months, but both of my wounds did heal on their own without surgery.
So your leg, the doctor like who did the cuts, they actually worked, and they didn't, your leg didn't, for lack of a better term, explode, right?
No, thank goodness. No, it relieved the pressure. Yeah. But because of the pressure, the outside wound actually, split. Like it actually tore.
Oh, yeah.
After he cut it. Yeah. So that one, you know, it wasn't the deeper one. The one on the inside was cool. It was so deep that when they removed my bandages and were moving my foot and toes to kind of test them, I could see inside my wound and see my ligaments and muscles moving. That to me was, if I was a queasier person, I would not have made it through that.
This is the difference between Luke and I. Like Luke is like about like turning white, and I'm like, tell me more. what did it smell like? What color was it?
Kyle, I can send you pictures later if you want.
He'd like to see them.
Yes.
He would like to see them.
Please.
Yeah. So, wow. Incredible. So how long was the full recovery, do you think, from out of hospital when they said it's touch and go whether you can use that leg to when you were walking more or less normally? How long was that recovery?
That took, let me see, it was in August. I actually ended up, my poor boyfriend was going through so much. He was trying to work, go back to school, and his mom got cancer right after I was getting out of the hospital. So he was dealing with so much that I remember I was on the phone one day crying to my sisters, and they ended up flying down from Iowa to Texas, packed up my Jeep, and took me back to Iowa. So I ended up being in Iowa from September to right after Thanksgiving, the end of November. And my goal at that point with the physical therapist was to be walking well enough that I could come back and go to my boyfriend's graduation on December 4th.
That
was the goal. And so, yeah, from August to 1st of December, I was finally walking, but I was using a cane. I could walk inside on my own, but outside going up and down stairs or over rough terrain, I used my cane for about another couple of months just to make sure I was okay. But I was driving on my own at that point, taking myself to my final appointments. So, you know, I was doing fairly well just by December. But then to finally get rid of the cane, end up taking, I think, probably to around February or March of that next year, I finally completely ditched the cane. And from that point, I've been doing well.
What an extraordinary ordeal. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us. Before we go, I've got a couple of things to touch on. And that was, did you take everything that happened to you and your learnings and realize all of that stuff you mentioned can be, obviously, if other people can access it, that's going to help them. And then kind of part of the same question, you mentioned pray and visualize, which was how you stayed positive. And I'd love to just hear where you got that from, because that's fascinating to me.
but the praying and the visualizing, I was raised a Christian. And, you know, it kind of goes back to my dad partly. You know, my whole family was raised that way, but my dad, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think how young I was. He was only 54 and he had a heart attack, a very, very bad heart attack that actually killed him and they brought him back. And then for the next 20 years of his life, he went through at least one surgery a year. And, you know, just horrible things. He was one of the first people to get a special heart pump that kept his heart pumping for years after, you know, his heart basically was dead. So he went through so much, but watching him in those 20 years, he never gave up.
Mm.
He stayed positive, even though he was in pain almost all the time. He could barely breathe. He was on oxygen, you know, had this heart pump he had to lug around with him. He still would tell you how great his life was. Wow. Because he lived long enough in those 20 years to see, you know, the rest of his grandkids graduate. He got to see great grandkids be born. Wow. You know, he got to see all these other things, these events in his life that he wouldn't have had. And he always told everybody that it was because of his prayer, his faith, and the prayer and the belief of others is what kept him alive and going that long.
Gosh.
And knowing that my mind is strong enough that anything is possible, I just merged the two.
Wow.
And that's what I've been sort of going off of for basically the last 5 or 6 years of my life.
Is your coaching Christian-based then or not? It's more holistic.
It's more holistic. I try to keep it open to anyone because I don't want to exclude anyone mm-hmm. when it comes to helping other people mm-hmm. because, you know, that's a Christian base, mm-hmm. you know, being Christian, truly being Christian to me doesn't mean you exclude anybody who isn't, mm-hmm. you know, if you're Christian, you're, you know, you want to help anybody who may need that help. So no, I try not to exclude. And I'm open about being a Christian and I talk mm. about that and I talk about my faith, mm. but I don't want to exclude anyone who may think differently than me. And I've been wanting to write since I was a kid. And that's one other thing that the incident kind of pushed me to do is that I had been writing and writing, but I hadn't yet published a book.
Mm.
And after that happened to me, after almost dying before ever realizing that dream, I decided I'm not going to let that happen. You know, this was my wake up call that life is short and I don't want to die before wow. I, you know, do more things on my bucket list, yeah. before I have more fun, before I go more places. And I definitely will at least be able to say I'm a published author. You know, it may not be the, you know, great American novel. It may not be a bestseller, but I will be able to say I'm a published author.
Yeah.
And so the incident was in August and in January, I finished and published my first book.
Wow.
Okay. And then in March, 2 months later, I finished and published my first poetry chapbook.
Wow.
And so I guess, so I finally realized that dream just within a few months of the incident. So while I was, you know, basically laying there recuperating, I was writing and, you know, learning how to self-publish and do all those things. So my focus then became my writing. And then I started learning something about coaching because that's where I wanted to end up. I wanted to somehow segue from the real estate into writing and coaching full time. And so that's what I've been working on. And so now with the writing side of it, I've also been creating things that can help people maybe along with the coaching, creating journals like a mindset, you know, and gratitude journal, hmm. you know, things that can be used in helping them get through the things that they're going through. And so, yeah, so it's still a work in progress. I've just gotten started. I'm creating a course right now and a program that where I can do group coaching. But, you know, I've actually worked with a couple of people one-on-one and that's available. So if people want to reach out, they want to learn more, you know, I'm always open to that, but yeah, but it's, like I said, it's just a new thing.
Isn't it extraordinary that a life-changing event or a near-death experience or something like that often triggers this revival or renewal of kind of enthusiasm to live your life?
It does. I mean, you know, because I of the divorce, I didn't have health insurance. Oof. And so, oh, yes, you can imagine I'm talking over $100,000 in medical bills.
Of course.
And so I had that hanging over my head suddenly. So I still needed to work. I still needed to make a living. So, you know, and I do love real estate. So I thought, okay, I have my business. It's doing well.
Mm.
So just keep doing that. And I have to do the other stuff on the side for now because I have to have a way to pay those bills. But instead of letting it completely take over my life, as maybe I'd done in the past with things, and a lot of us do, you know, you get focused on paying the bills. You get focused on taking care of your family, you know, keeping a roof over your head, putting food on the table. You take care of all those things that you tend to put anything that may bring you joy beyond that on the back burner.
Yeah.
And it stays there until something like that happens. I'm hoping that, you know, more people will hear that story and not wait until something happens to then do more things in their life.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was the push I needed to also make time for the things that bring me joy. I have so much more joy because I now have brought back in those things in my life that mean something to me beyond the just making a living and paying bills.
It's beautiful.
That was phenomenal. Thank you so much.
It's a Thank very you. Inspiring story, Anne. And well, my mom's called Anne, by the way. So big fan of that name.
We must be a great lady.
Yeah, she is. She is. We will post any relevant links and that people can get in touch with you on the show notes when your episode is live, which I always say every week. But when people are listening, it already will be live. So I need to get my head around how to do that properly.
And it's tough when you record and then plan for later.
Yeah, well, it's funny, we have some guests on and they're so good, they're like, great to meet all of your listeners, and I'm thinking to myself, it's just us here, because there will be listeners. Yeah, okay, I got it now. So we'll make sure that people can get in touch with you. Your story has been incredible and inspiring, and thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your time. It's been wonderful.
Yes, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.